United States against Noble. Mr. Riggins.
May it please the court. My name is Kenneth Riggins. I represent Chad Noble and also represented him at the trial court. I come here today to discuss this case and indicate that I think that the jury got the case wrong and that no rational trier of fact could reach the same conclusion that he was involved in a drug conspiracy of the sort. Here's the problem that I have. When you take an individual, you put drugs in front of them, you play wiretaps over a course of 3 or 4 days, and you make the association along with the government informant come in and testify, it's very hard for the jury to make the decision to distinguish that there was drug activity going on, that from the there was an agreement to have criminal activity going on. There's a huge separation between the two. So if we look at the first part, there is no doubt that there was a buyer-seller relationship that was existing between the two individuals.
Mr. Riggins, what would you like us to do? Would you like us to vacate the conspiracy conviction and replace it with the substantive conviction?
Judge, we'd like for you to vacate both.
I don't see how the line, well, you know, they caught me red-handed dealing drugs, is a very good defense.
Well, I'm not sure they actually caught him red-handed dealing drugs. If you look at, there were thousands of phone calls in this particular case, Judge, and in those thousands of phone calls, my client is only on 4 of those phone calls. And on those 4 phone calls, he's not doing any drug transactions as it relates to this particular case. I mean, what he has in front of him is a drug informant, government cooperating witness who comes in and testifies saying that he's engaged in activities with him. I mean, that's the heart and soul of the problem, but they don't have him red-handed in any of those association transactions as it relates to the witness who testified. Now, they did catch him in Illinois, in which there was some drugs, a pound of methamphetamine found inside of his trunk. But those drugs in and of themselves were not connected to the individual who testified, Miller, under these circumstances. What we see what happened with Miller was he said that, hey, I loaned this guy some money. That's the same thing as making a bank loan to a particular individual, but it certainly doesn't make them a partner engaged in criminal activity.
Didn't he describe himself as a middleman?
A middleman is still separate from someone who decided to engage in criminal activity with another individual. That's the same thing as someone saying Costco will move the goods from the farmer to the individual, and then someone who buys them from Costco then says, under those circumstances, they intend to resell them.
Well, he's certainly more involved if he described himself as a middleman than your initial depiction was.
Yeah, well, I understand. Even if he is a middleman, that still doesn't mean that he engaged in a partnership.
Regularly.
No, but it means he's guilty of the substantive offense. And the sentence for the substantive offense is absolutely identical to the sentence for the conspiracy. So what's the point?
I understand, Judge, but the point is I'm not sure that they even have enough information to reach the same conclusion. It's
but that's your position, that he committed the substantive offense but not the conspiracy. And when the defendant's own position
is,
I'm guilty of the substantive crime, but they didn't show I agreed to do this with X. You understand it raises questions about what this is all about.
I understand, Judge, but I'm saying he was known to have been a drug dealer in other circumstances. I'm not saying that he actually participated with this individual. What I'm saying is even if we get to the activity that he'd done in the past and what he had been punished for in the past, it does not relate well are directly with this particular experience. What we say is that he can't make the connection between agreeing to engage in the criminal activity, and therefore he's not a partner, he's not an employee, or any of those particular things as it relates to the witness who testified. What's different about this case as well is that my client, under the first circumstances, was alleged to have been the supplier, and then under the second circumstance, who would issue credit to the individual who was involved in this particular case who testified against him. But in the circumstances that the government presented to the jury was what the person who was receiving the goods was actually the one who was extending credit to my client for some other purpose in the future, which is not directly related to any of the drugs that were alleged to have been involved in this conspiracy. My client is not connected in any way to any of the drugs that are involved in this particular conspiracy. So even if we assume that they caught him with those drugs, or if they caught his mother with those drugs, who owned the car and who was operating the car under those circumstances, it still would not be connected back to my client under those circumstances. If there are no questions from the bench at this time, I will reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Certainly, Mr. Reyes.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors.
Markman, why is this case charged as a conspiracy? I mean, this reads to me as if the U.S. prosecutor looks at the case and says, I have an absolutely unlosable substantive case against Noble. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to charge it as a conspiracy and see if I can find a way to lose it.
I don't think that's the case at all, Judge.
Why in the world was this charged as a conspiracy?
You wanted to try it in southern Indiana, right?
The only methamphetamine caught that Chad Noble was caught with on his person was in Effingham, Illinois. He was coming back from Texas and bringing it back to Indiana. The instances of Chad Noble distributing methamphetamine in the Southern District of Indiana, the government relied on the testimony of the cooperating defendant, the cooperator. There were no drugs that would be put on the table for that. If you tried to charge those individual drug transactions from the cooperator's memory, I would submit that you'd have a very tenuous case and a difficult case to charge without any drugs on the table. In this instance, there were drugs on the table, but they were seized in the Central District of Illinois. It was clear that Noble was a Southern District of Indiana drug dealer. It was clear that he was a menace to Terre Haute. And it was clear that this, our office, the Southern District of Indiana, needed to charge him, and he needed to be charged. But the conspiracy in this instance was the only way to really charge him in the absence of any other seizures or controlled purchases from Noble or video surveillance of him doing certain things in the Southern District of Indiana. I guess that would be my answer to that question, Your Honor. I would submit to the court that there are at least five pieces of evidence in this case that were before the jury at the trial that would demonstrate and would be a sufficient basis to find that Noble and Miller conspired with each other that were above and beyond their relationship as a buyer and a seller in this case. One fact that's kind of been glossed over but I think is extremely important is that Miller testified that Noble enlisted him to drive him to Chicago to pick up a load of methamphetamine and drive it back to Indiana where it was distributed. Noble called Miller, asked him if he would drive him to Chicago to pick up methamphetamine. Noble got a rental car. Miller agreed to drive up there. They drove up. They went to a barber shop. Noble told Miller to get your hair cut and I'll be back in a minute with the methamphetamine. Noble, in fact, got the methamphetamine. They drove back to a customer's house somewhere on the Indiana-Illinois border. It's not clear which side of the border it was on. Noble instructed Miller to stop so that they could deliver some of that methamphetamine that was picked up in Chicago to this customer. And then they came back to Terre Haute, and ultimately Miller got some of the methamphetamine as well. This is an instance in the conspiracy and in their drug relationship where Miller's not acting as a buyer or at all. He's acting as a transporter, if anything. So it's clear that that's a piece of evidence that the jury that was before the jury that would provide a sufficient basis that has nothing to do with being a buyer and a seller. Another piece of evidence that was in front of the jury that Mr. Riggins alluded to was the loan that Miller made to Noble to keep Noble's drug business going. Noble contacts Miller and asks him if he would provide him with a $5,000 loan, which Miller does. Noble then uses this money to travel to Texas and obtain approximately 1 pound of methamphetamine, and that's the methamphetamine that he's caught with and when he stopped in Effingham, Illinois, and where he's ultimately locked up in Effingham. Again, that's not a That's not a buyer-seller. That's not a sale that went on between these two, but it was clearly activity within the conspiracy and clearly shows that they were working together to try to distribute methamphetamine.
You did assume, I'm clear, that you instructed on the definition of a conspiracy, right?
We did, Your Honor, yes. There were several instructions regarding the conspiracy.
And there were some old instructions that were somewhat problematic. Were there any objections to the conspiracy instructions given in this case?
I don't believe there were, Your Honor. In fact, it was the old instruction. It was instruction 30, which talked about buyer and seller in particular and cautioned the jury that mere buyer and seller would not be enough to convict the defendant of a conspiracy. It listed out the laundry list of different factors that the jury could consider in deciding whether this was a buyer-seller or whether this was, in fact, a conspiracy to distribute. I believe during the instruction conference, both the government's counsel and defense counsel agreed to this instruction, and there was no objection to my knowledge. There was also an instruction 30A, which was submitted, which said that something to the effect that consignment sales or fronting would also be evidence of a conspiracy as opposed to a mere buyer-seller relationship. So I believe that was all that was covered. Getting back to some of the factors that would show that demonstrate or be a sufficient basis for a conspiracy as opposed to a mere buyer-seller relationship in this particular case, after Noble was arrested in Effingham, Illinois, and he was locked up in the jail there, Noble had someone contact Miller and seek to have Miller post his bond, a $9,000 cash bond, so that Noble could get out of jail. Miller did this. He provided $9,000 for Noble to be bonded out of the Effingham County Jail. He did this, and he testified they did this so that Noble could get back on the street, so they could get back to business of dealing methamphetamine. Again, this is not a buy-sell transaction. This is just a money transaction between them, and it's part of the conspiracy, and it demonstrates that they were not merely just arms-length buyers and sellers, but they were, in fact, full conspirators here. They discussed later on in the conspiracy, they discussed on several occasions protecting themselves from law enforcement. Noble provided advice to Miller when one of Miller's customers was stopped and arrested by the local police in Terre Haute. Noble told Miller that you ought to clean your house out, you ought to dump your phone and get a new phone, all along the lines of advice. Advice, however, that Miller did take and did all those things after he was told that by Noble. So all of these things, Your Honor, went to show that again, that they were operating not just one-to-one transactions that occurred, and either they occurred or they didn't occur, and they had no other dealing with each other. But these two individuals, Noble and Miller, were clearly interlocked in how they went about their drug business. There were, of course, repeated and somewhat standardized transactions. Some of the language of the old instruction in some of the cases. But in this case also, there was evidence that, according to Miller, that on every occasion that he received methamphetamine from Noble, it was fronted in whole or at least partially fronted to him. So we had consistently consignment sales. And again, this is, as this court said in other cases such as Moreland and Nunez, the extending credit implies a significant degree of trust and commitment between the two parties, and I would suggest that the fronting alone perhaps is a basis. But in any event, the fronting together with the other parts of their relationship and the close mutual working together, mutual support, clearly puts this case outside the area of mere buyer and seller. I would ask the court to affirm the conviction in this case. If there are no other questions, I will yield the rest of my time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Riggins?
Yes, Your Honor.
Your Honor, if I could touch on a few things that was mentioned there, and it further pushes my point as it relates to some sort of partnership that had to have began between Miller and Noble, Miller being the government cooperating witness under these circumstances. When it comes to driving to Chicago, when we talk about a partnership, if a partnership was formed, what we would see more along the lines is Miller deciding to rent the car on behalf of Noble. He would drive the car, furnish the gas, and do everything else. What I'm asking this court to do is to to slightly modify the analysis that we've been making in the past and to say that in order for there to be a conspiracy, there has to be the formation of this partnership, some sort of partnership that would be akin to a law partnership or a business partnership or some other partnership. There has to be a sharing of the profits. There has to be direct correlation between the individuals meeting and discussing how profits will be distributed among each other and how they will conduct business over time. If you look at what he said as it relates to him and the loan was not for a particular methamphetamine under those circumstances. He made a loan, just a simple loan, to make $1,500 off of $5,000. That's a business decision that he made that would not be done to someone's partner. A partner does not charge someone greater than 25% interest on a particular loan if you are, in fact, a partner under those circumstances. If we also look at the $9,000 that he put up for bail for him under these circumstances, Mr. Noble also got money from other people as well to get him out of jail. Would that make them partners under these circumstances in a conspiracy as well? What we haven't talked about and what I touched on in my brief is that you'll notice that Miller and Noble engaged in real estate transactions as well. So under these circumstances, because Noble extended credit to Miller for the transactions of the real estate, do we then grant him the idea that they're engaged in a real estate conspiracy to take over the real estate of Terre Haute, Indiana? And what I would argue to this court is no, it does not rise to that level, and we wouldn't make that analysis because it's real estate. The problem we have, especially from the defense bar, is that when you put drugs in front of a jury, when you put informants to testify, even though there's no direct testimony linking my client to any particular drugs, when you put them on there for 5 days, put other people on there talking about drugs that are unconnected to my client, you arrive at this particular notion. It doesn't give the jury the opportunity to say, okay, well, if there are 4,000 calls and he's only on four, and on none of these 4,000 calls he's talking about drugs, how on earth are they engaged in a partnership? Partners have to meet regularly. They have to discuss the business that they're engaged in. They have to do that in order to maintain it.
They have to do little things like pay your commissary bill while you're in prison?
Yes, Judge. Now, partners would do that if in fact, that you had that sort of relationship. But in order for us to do that, we'd have to look and see who else put money on Noble's books. And you would find that his wife did, his girlfriends did, everybody else that was associated with him, his boyfriends that were close to him, put money on his particular books. That does not make them a partner in any particular relationship.
It's just another step in taking an overall look at things.
That's the analysis that I'm making. I agree that we have to take a broader approach when we say, where is the partnership? What kind of partnership? What we would say is this: as partners, what we would say is, if I made $1,000 and there are three or two of us engaged in a partnership, I'm going to send you your $500 to the commissary. And we did not see that happen. And so what I'm saying is, there's not a true partnership here.
I don't understand this argument.
Well, Judge,
what is it in the statute that makes conspiracy the same thing as a common law partnership? The Supreme Court defined drug conspiracy, the 846 conspiracy, in United States against Shabani. It doesn't use the language of partnership. Do you think the Supreme Court was wrong?
I think it's time to push the analysis.
A court of appeals cannot disagree with the Supreme Court.
Well, that's a different...
You can file a cert petition saying, dear justices, please overrule Shabani and define conspiracy differently. But we can't do that.
I understand, Judge, but even under those circumstances, I still say there's not enough there to reach the conclusion that he was engaged in the conspiracy.
You don't think there's enough here to meet the definition of conspiracy in Shabani? Your brief doesn't discuss Shabani.
It does not, Judge. If you had no further questions at this time, I would relinquish the balance of my time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mr. Riggins, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement.